What's up, everybody? We have 10 minutes here with Mr. Ryan Muckenhorn. Mark, thanks for letting me open this one up. It's been a minute since I've been on with you.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome back to you. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you.
It's great to have both of you. I truly enjoy your company.
Thank you. Not dead. Neither Ryan nor myself. So,
fun fact.
Let's talk about a cartridge.
Yo.
This is one that we've been asked a lot about.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we haven't done it. It's not, when you ask about cartridges and we don't do them for a while, it's not because we don't like you. It's just, you know, there's other stuff going on. So this one is the 300 Blackout. Sometimes AAC gets thrown in there too, correct? Ryan, tell us about this very interesting little, cute little cartridge.
Before we go, you say very interesting. I think this cartridge is very interesting. When I brought it up to Ryan, I thought I'd get a level of excitement. You appeared underwhelmed.
I thought we were going a different direction. And then that hit. I'm like, God.
I kind of zigged and then you zagged. And so it was more of a caught you off guard sort of thing.
I zigged and I zagged. Mark's like, hey, meet me at the mall. And then he was at the pool. That was the kind
That's an analogy. Missed expectations. That didn't happen.
Yeah. Now that one gets me in trouble at home all the time. what? Tell us about it, though. We got it. Let's dive right in. 300 Blackout.
Yeah. Very adorable cartridge on the cartridge scale. Started life as a wildcat. J.D. Jones, prolific gunsmith, cartridge creator, master of many things, and especially those things that are subsonic, took an existent case, the 221 Fireball, which I don't think we did a podcast directly set up for the 221 Fireball.
No, I think we've talked about the 17 Fireball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And other Fireball.
We've talked about the Fireball a lot. Anyway, JD.
Great for ice fishing.
Oh. JD took the 221 Fireball case, necked it up. So we opened the case mouth up and put a 240 grain Sierra Match King in it, 30 caliber. So he took this comically large bullet and put it in this comically small case.
Right.
The intent was a subsonic cartridge to be fired out of the AR platform or similar platforms or a contender pistol or whatever you really wanted to chamber it in that was pushing the super heavyweight projectile at subsonic, so sub 1040 foot per second velocity, maintain high energy on target, low noise, low recoil signature, and kind of mystifying, physics defying ballistics.
Hmm.
And that ran out for a long time. In fact, the first suppressor I ever shot was on a homebrewed 300 Whisper.
Oh, so when you're saying Whisper, is that what it was originally called?
It was.
Okay, yep. Got it.
So a couple things with that. Folks wanted the Whisper because it was really neat.
Right.
And so they're like, oh, well, we'll just cut down 223 cases and make 300 Whispers out of 223 cases that have been cut down to 221 Fireball length. The problem was, the case dimensions, like if we were to cross-section a 223 case, the case dimension at the component of the body where it's cut down is too thick, and you'd end up with these problems chambering or reloading.
Yeah.
So the 223 case cut to 221 Fireball dimensions, excuse me, yeah, Fireball, Whisper, Fireball, cut to 221 Fireball dimensions, the neck component would be too thick for conventional reloading and chambering without some sort of forethought put into that. You'd have to turn the case next, which is a complete and total pain in the butt when we're trying to make an AR cartridge, because we're probably going to lose some brass.
Shooting milli rounds.
So, enter the wizards at AAC, Advanced Armament Corporation, and the standardization of the 300 Blackout, they accounted for this in the cartridge dimensions. They made the cartridge effectively the same, except for that neck, which is typically heavier. So you could take 5.56 brass or commercial 223 brass, cut it down at the length requirement, run it through a sizing die. We've now formed the case to its rough exterior dimensions, chamfer, deburr, seat a 30 caliber bullet, and have a day.
Oh, so at this point you can do the thing where you just chop one of these cases, but is it something they've done with the guns then that makes them able to chamber the...
Just the chamber dimension.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct, at the neck specifically. But exterior dimensions of the cartridge elsewhere are effectively identical. Performance is effectively identical. There's been somewhat of a split in the cartridge, and we think about it in two camps. One is supersonic, one is subsonic, because they are, at that point, remarkably different cartridges.
Yeah.
And they do two very different things and kind of have two different intents, I guess. So in the subsonic loading, which is kind of where the Whisper came
Mm-hmm.
into prolificness, heavyweight projectiles, low velocities, enormous high retention of that velocity.
And when you're talking about a heavyweight projectile, we're talking like
200 and plus grain projectiles.
A big pill.
And monsters.
I mean, you've covered this, but a very big pill. Like when we say like, oh, it's a big, like that's very big for like a 223.
That's why they look so darn cute when they sit there. I mean, yeah. Gosh. I guess it's not like you're making the bullet any wider because it's a 300 caliber bullet. But I mean, it's just this. It's a big pill, like Mark was just saying. Yeah,
grande.
Anyway.
Yeah, 240 grain Sierra Match King is like longer than I think I got to measure one than a 221 Fireball case. So yeah, the two when they squish them together, you just have barely enough room for some powder in there to make it go bang. What's super crazy about it is because we're not breaking the sonic barrier and then falling through transonic and into subsonic, and we're not disrupting the bullet, they lose very little velocity over distance.
Yeah.
So your fired velocity at 1040 and your retained velocity at 200 yards is remarkably close.
Right.
Like, spooky. When you look at it on paper, you're like, nah.
It's amazing how much breaking the sound barrier
screws stuff up.
Yeah, it messes things up.
Absolutely.
What are people using that heavy subsonic round for then?
In both cases, the 300 Blackout and 300 Whisper, and we're just going to talk about them interchangeably because effectively they are, sort of. I would say self-defense and clandestine operations.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that's a good way to put it.
You know what that means, Mark?
No, I know exactly what that means.
Kicking doors.
Yeah.
I was going to ask what it means.
So it fulfills kind of the same niche that a suppressed subgun would, as far as like rate of fire, effective range. But it does so with way more in the oomph category, penetrating power kind of thing. And so like the 220, 240 grain Match King loads, when they were kind of in vogue, those were naughty.
Yeah. Now, Ryan, maybe the answer is, not as complicated, or maybe it's kind of obvious, but, you can get a subsonic. I'm not telling you any news. You can find subsonic, pretty big pill, 9mm. And shoot that out of AR platforms these days and shoot it suppressed and it's movie quiet and all that stuff. And maybe even, I don't know, I mean, that sort of 9mm ammo might not be as easy to find as the regular stuff. Yeah. None of it's easy to find these days. But why would somebody go with the 300 Blackout over that?
Well, one, your Blackout would then be able to rock and roll and go supersonic. And then we are so drastically far apart from a 9mm at that point. We're in a completely different like roll and cartridge category. But like looking at, I think the heaviest weight 9mm you could probably buy right now is 165 grain.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an aerodynamically inefficient bullet. It's going to be like shooting a soup can versus like a rocket. And so the subsonic loadings with like the 220, 240 or the 208A Max or 208 ELDs, because of their shape, they retain that velocity better. They hit harder. They penetrate better. If that's the objective, if that's the goal.
Yeah.
Well, and would I be correct in saying, like, from whatever, interchangeability, I don't know, like stuff you might already have on hand, like essentially if you had a regular AR in 5.56, the only difference would be the barrel, right?
Yeah.
Ish?
You can make an argument for the magazine follower as well, but I've, I've shot a lot of Blackout out of 5.56 PMAGs. No issue.
Okay.
But the followers can be a little different. Feed lips can be a little bit different.
Okay.
But you can make do. But yeah, all it would be a barrel change. And then with the barrel change, the appropriate gas system length change. So you're not going to be running like a 20-inch rifle barrel with a full-length rifle gas system. You're going to go down to a carbine length gas system.
Well, and speaking of gases, and one of the nice things about the subsonic 300 Blackouts and all that stuff is usually their powder is all burnt up by, I mean, what is it, about 7.5, 8 inches down the barrel?
Yeah.
So if you chop the barrel down legally and make an SBR out of it or something like that, or legally. Some pistol, legal, whatever. then in that case, you're not going to be shooting out flaming balls of burning powder behind the bullet. It's all nicely contained.
You're actually probably operating in a better space, because if you go too long with the barrel and you're trying to shoot those subsonic things, you can actually slow them down.
Yeah.
You need to get a pretty darn long barrel to do that, but it can work, as a detractor.
Yeah.
They're optimized for short barrel lengths. And that's a whole other part of this. When we look at the PDW concept, personal defense weapon concept, small, discreet, hyper-effective setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like, oftentimes it's like, you shorten that barrel, you're going to sacrifice some performance.
That's a great example of where this is a whole new thing.
Sometimes what about the what about the supers? Is that where you were going?
Yep, that was okay. Great transition.
Yeah, what's the point?
come on, Jim. So let's say you've got an AR. You want a little better terminal performance on, we're going to say medium game, whitetail.
Oh, we're going hunting now.
Yeah, whitetail, hogs.
Ruben hunts with his 300 blackout all the time, every year.
You know, things like that. You have this AR. Heck, you even have a 300 blackout upper for, we'll just say 16-inch, because it's pretty common. It's what the everyday man or woman can purchase without having to jump through any hoops and legalities and forms. Drop in a 110-grain Barnes TAC XP or TAC TX bullet in there, and that is a lights-out 250-yard deer gun and in. Because now ballistically, we're very close to like 30-30 Winchester 7.62 by 39 Russian, which is the AK round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're pushing that projectile in the, you know, modest to mid 2400 foot per second range.
Yeah.
And it's a very lethal cartridge. It's an exceptional little round. A couple gun companies have chambered it in bolt rifles. You can buy a Ruger American in that now. Remington has done some stuff in there. It's a fantastic little cartridge. Great little hunting gun. Very low recoil. And wildly effective on game.
But, Ryan, why do that when you can just get a 7.62 by 39?
Well, a number of reasons, Jim. Really, it's just ammo. So, commercially available quality hunting ammunition in 7.62 by 39 is pretty rare. You can get some lacquer case soft point stuff. I would say your expectation of accuracy should be a bit lower, perhaps. And then, of course, the weapons platforms that they're fired in. So, ARs... Everybody knows how to use them. They're very comfortable. They're scalable, you know, from small stature shooters to full-size folks. Generally speaking, they're very accurate. You can put weapon sights on them with a little fuss.
Mm-hmm.
AKs add an element of difficulty.
Have you ever shot one of those ARs chambered in 7.62 by 39 with the Iraq or whatever by CMMG, you know, takes AK mags and all that stuff? Is that pretty sweet?
Yeah.
Does it, like, take the best of both worlds?
The magazine geometry required for that cartridge is such that you end up with this goofy magazine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you end up with a goofy bolt head diameter. So the 300 blackout or 300 AAC or 300 whisper bolt head is the same as that of a 5.56. It's got enough meat around the recess in the bolt face to catch the rim of the cartridge and then have locking lugs. When we go to the AK bolt head, and this is going to share with like a 6.5 Grendel, things like this, it's kind of in this in-between space between a 5.56 bolt carrier group and a 308 bolt carrier group, and they can be a little prone to cracking and things like that. That's high volume stuff. I mean, if this is like a recreation gun, it's probably not a huge consideration or concern to make, but something to think about. It's not so direct, though. It's not like you could have an AR chambered in 223 and readily swap it at a relative low cost of just the barrel with 7.62 by 39, because now we're going barrel, bolt, magazine.
Yeah,
and new elements.
Okay.
At first glance, I wish we had them both right here. Maybe we'll have to like get a picture or something of them next to each other.
It's 2022.
Through the power of editing.
Holograms. Ryan,
we do have them right here. I'm holding them we...
It's amazing how you can make it float that way.
But the 7.62 by 39 and the 300 blackout don't look too dissimilar when they're next to each other.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And yet, like you said, but they are very different.
They are. Common loading for the 7.62 by 39 is like a 123, 124 grain projectile. And a very common loading in the 300 AAC is going to be like a 125 or a 150 in a supersonic loading. And ballistically, we'd call them darn near equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can make a touch of an argument either direction, but
I still feel, maybe if I had a 300 blackout rifle, I'd feel different. I don't know why I don't have one. I actually like it. I should have one, but I don't know why I don't. Anyway, I feel like if I had one, maybe then I'd, I'll shoot something supersonic out of this, whatever. I feel like I just have to shoot it subsonic, because every time I've shot one subsonic with a suppressor, it's so pleasant.
They're laughably quiet.
It's just...
It would be magic.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, and let me ask you
wonderful.
This, Ryan.
Going hunting that way and knowing it's like, oh, I'm going to take this shot. And then deer falls down, you're not ringing,
right.
You actually have presence of mind after, I mean, it's amazing.
Because, like, what do you think, like, let's say you're going to hunt whitetails in Wisconsin, and you're in a spot where you're anticipating a maximum 200-yard shot. Could you shoot those big subs and be effective, or would you want to limit? I know we're talking distances and parameters and ethics and performance and all the buzzwords that people like to comment on.
I know people who have. I would not shoot subs.
Interesting. Is that a terminal performance expansion thing then?
Yep.
So okay. Just bar none, not at a deer.
Not me. Maybe with a very special bullet, which they have now since the last time I touched on this in my own head.
Yeah.
Like the viability of this. Your options really were the Sierra Match King and a handful of others that were not made for this kind of thing. They have now come out with bullets that are purpose-built for expansion at subsonic velocities. And then they become probably wildly terminally effective. I'm still gonna shoot supers. Are you putting a suppressor on it?
Yeah.
It makes no difference.
What?
It goes from like stupid quiet to pretty darn quiet.
But quiet is so quiet.
Thank you, Mark. Stupid quiet.
We were shooting one of our coworkers' suppressed bolt gun. He's got a 700 redone and 300 blackout with 208 Hornady subs.
Mm-hmm.
And the firing pin striking the primer was louder than the report from the muzzle. The bullet hitting the steel at 200 yards was way louder than all of it.
You know who would use a 300 blackout? Subs with a suppressor? Anton Sugar, whatever his last name is, from No Country for Old Men. Yeah, 100% he's using that cartridge.
You guys have been talking about that constantly.
I just watched it again, and it's... Actually, no, that was my first time. Sorry. I've seen it in pieces before, but this is my first time, start to finish.
Yeah, it's a fun cartridge. I own the components to make one. I even have a tiny jig that I can put 223 cases in, a tiny little Harbor Freight chop saw that cuts them to the proper length, and then I run them through a sizing die. I've never put the gun together.
maybe we should do that. I've been interested. Like, I remember, you know, you're talking about the 300 Whisper. I remember, like, reading about it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this thing sounds, like, so cool, so amazing. And then all of a sudden it was, like, gone and the 300 blackout and yay.
I feel like what happened was the 6.8 SPC was almost like somebody had, like, a little clay pigeon launcher and it was just, and everyone was watching it fly through the air. And then the 300 blackout was like, shot it right out of the air. And then everybody was like, oh, next big thing for ARs. And then it kind of has now, I don't know.
Well, Jim,
you know, 300 blackouts aren't as prolific as I would have thought they would have been.
What Jim just did is use the word 6.8 SPC in a podcast. And now the cartridge debate will start in the comments below.
Yes.
All right. Well.
Good. Okay. Well. Hopefully this sufficed everybody's need for hearing a podcast on the 300 AAC blackout. And if you have any other comments, thoughts, or arguments about it versus the 7.62x39, the 6.8 SPC, or whatever else.
Even the 5.56,
Please drop those thoughts in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube or over on Instagram. We'd love to hear them. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.